The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sitting in for Bill, who is on vacation, the lucky dog. Welcome to the show on this lovely Friday, May 11th. Joining us for the newsmaker interview today is the superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District, Gabriel Trujillo. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dylan. Thank you for having me in.
And making sure that the superintendent is going to be in the hot seat for the next half an hour, joining me to shoot some questions his way is the political reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, Joe Ferguson. Thanks for coming in, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
Superintendent, before we really dig down into some of the nitty-gritty about the latest budget developments, and I'm sure you've got a lot to talk about there, I just want to clear up something that's been out there, the impact on students and their families. Are you going to have to extend the school year any because of the teacher walkout?
No, thankfully, because of such great planning on the part of our team, and I'm lucky to be surrounded by such amazing team members, both at the district office and at our sites, we were able to come up with some creative solutions that avoided the necessity of trying to add additional days after the instructional calendar. So graduation's unaffected. It's scheduled. And the final day of school remains the final day of school as it was originally scheduled. No students will have to return after the last day of school. So we're very happy about that.
So you had enough minutes already built into your schedule, or did you have to add any extra time during the day? Or
there were three or four schools that we had to do that with, primarily Warren Elementary, and we're very thankful for the commitment of those employees to be able to modify their calendars and lengthen their days accordingly so that we could meet the mandatory 890 minutes of instruction mandated by the state of Arizona. So there was only a few schools that really had to do that. We just only had to make sure that we added the contract days for our employees, and we were able to do that through some great collaborative efforts with our employee associations that will result in not only not having to extend the instructional year, but we're not going to have to extend the contract year for the teachers.
So there are a whole lot of moving pieces involved here, but what is your quick take on the outcome of the Red for Ed teacher walkout and the budget that was passed by the state legislature?
Well, the quick take, really, I would really love our listeners in the community and the city to just understand a few really important things. Number one, it's not that we're not going to give a 9% raise, okay? It's a question of can we guarantee it, and that's what I want to talk about. And then secondly, that just like it is the case in every other school district in the state of Arizona, ultimately it's the decision of our governing board. They are the ultimate deciders on how this money targeted toward salaries is going to be spent and amongst what employment groups and to who, and they'll be making that decision. And lastly, the statement that we have $21 million. We don't have $21 million.
$21 million extra?
We have $21 million extra dollars when you take away the money that we've lost due to declining enrollment, when you take away the money that we've lost due to a decrease in the teacher experience index funding that we've received, when you take away the original 1.06 teacher raise money that we counted on, when you take away the money that we have to utilize to cover the gap, the carryover gap that we have to bring forward, that all whittles down to about $10,200,000 to really work with. So I really wanted to clarify that. I know there's been some statements, largely legislative statements at TUSD as $21 million. Well, sure, that's if we've lost zero kids over the last 2 years. That's if we didn't lose any kids last year. That's if our teacher
And you have been losing students.
And we have been losing students. So the accurate number is the $10,200,000 that we have available to work with.
Your biggest retention problem, though, is with students. Why not put the money towards the teachers? I mean, you're having a lot of problems with losing teachers. Why not put the money there? Why extend it out to staff, to janitors, to others?
So again, I want to clarify that statement. Nobody's saying that the money's not going to go to the teachers. What we're saying is that the governing board ultimately has a final decisive vote that they have to take in terms of if they're going to give it all to the teachers. Then you also have to get into what's defined as a teacher. Are we going to use the Auditor General's description of a teacher for the purposes of the 301 definition, which is a personnel member that is providing 50% or more of their time in daily instruction, direct instruction to kids, and holds state certification to do so. Now, that's different than what our consensus agreement describes as a teacher or somebody that would perform those services. So there's very big decisions that have to be made at the governing board level, and nobody ever says not. Nobody's ever saying that none of this money is going to go to teachers. The question that's on the table is, will every bit of the new funding, including the extra million or including the extra $3.9 million that Tucson Unified is expected to receive in district additional assistance, will every single dollar of new funding go to salaries? That's the question on the table, and that question can only be answered by our governing board. But I would challenge a statement that's out there that we're not going to give money to teachers. I would challenge a statement that that a final decision has been made. I would challenge a statement that we're going to nilly-willy give out the bulk of this money to various different employment groups, because none of that has been decided at this point.
I was doing some digging over the last couple of days, and in one of the most recent Arizona Auditor General reports, amongst all big Pima County school districts, TUSD has the highest average teacher salary. Is that a reflection of having a large number of teachers who've been there for a good amount of time, experienced folks who've put in years?
Well, I think if you look at this year's, which has us right around 50,000 or a little bit above, I got to kind of take this year as the exception, because if you remember, in the 16-17 school year, we gave out a bulk distribution of Prop 301 money. We gave out an exorbitantly large distribution to the teachers. And it had to be done. We had to draw down those funds. We had $21 million sitting in that pot, and we had to draw it down immediately. So teachers
saw... So that's kind of a temporary...
It was a temporary... It was a one-time distribution, which had our salaries unnecessarily high. Not unnecessarily high, but unusually high, that I think has to be discussed, because it is a factor that led to that sort of $50,000. We're actually more around the $47,000 mark if you back out that unusually large payment of Prop 301 monies.
That would still be one of the tops in the county, and right just a little bit below the state average.
Yes, still one of the tops in the county, just a little bit below the state average, absolutely.
Are you looking at some sort of a challenge as a lot of these experienced teachers start to retire?
Yeah, and I think you see that.
How do you deal with that?
You see that most notably in the reduction that we've taken in the teacher experience funding, which really gives us additional monies for having teachers beyond the state's average of experience for teachers. We've seen a decline in that for a couple of reasons. Number one, we have a graying of our teacher population. Teachers just naturally hitting their points and exercising their option to retire. And then we're also seeing teachers kind of consistent with what we've seen nationwide and statewide, just not staying in the profession as long as they used to. I think the average now is 5 years. It's starting to get more towards three or four in terms of teachers exercising their decisions to opt out of a career in the classroom. So that's hit us in terms of being able to rely on that pot that we've been able to rely on as much in the past.
We haven't heard a number. So a lot of people have said that, you know, it's going to be a 9% raise for teachers. What are you bringing to the board as a percentage for teachers?
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now is our associations are meeting to develop scenarios. Okay, the Teachers Association for the Tucson Unified School District, the Tucson Education Association, they're meeting with the AFSCME Association, the American Federation for School Community and Municipal Employees. They're meeting, as well as with CWA, Communication Workers of America, to develop collaboratively scenarios for how they would like to see these funds distributed. So they're going to probably bring on Tuesday night's board meeting, they're going to have ready two or three different scenarios for the board to consider. Our scenario, because we're obligated to at least put it in front of our board, our scenario is going to be directly aligned to the legislative intent that has been written and developed by the legislature with regard to this money, that all of the money should be dedicated to teacher raises. So we have a responsibility to at least put that scenario in front of our governing board. That scenario, to provide the 9%, would utilize all $10,185,000 that we have left over from this additional funding, would be all going to teacher salaries, and then it wouldn't cover the benefits. We're on our own to cover the benefits associated with that. So we'd have to carve out another $1.5 million just to be able to hit the 10%, just to be able to handle the 10% increase plus the benefits. So there would be zero money available for any capital needs, zero money available for anything else. But that is a scenario that aligns to the legislative intent that we have a responsibility to have the board consider.
But I get the sense it doesn't have your signature on it as a recommended strategy.
You know, I want to stay away from that. I want to stay away from giving my own personal opinion as we get closer to a board vote. I do think that we have a responsibility to address multiple stakeholders. I think what gets lost in this is your teacher is your primary player in terms of a school district. They are the franchise player. Your system is built around the classroom teacher, but guess who else it's built around? The student and their parents. And when you have equal pressure points being applied to the system, the need to address the salaries of the teachers is just as strong as the need to address the facilities on the part of the parents and the kids. The parents and the kids do not want to continue to ride buses that don't have air condition. They do not want to have to continue to come into buildings that have dilapidated flooring or have broken windows or don't have Wi-Fi. They're tired of their textbooks being outdated. And their taxpayers and their voters, they are equally as strong, and that's the conundrum that we're in. So my recommended strategy would be to be as transparent as possible, be as collaborative as possible, and consider all points of view before finally making a recommendation on how these monies are going to be distributed. Because the narrative has drastically changed. In the last 60 days, we've heard one thing prior to the end of the legislative session. We heard we're going to be providing the state of Arizona, the school districts in Arizona, a $100 million pot of money as our first step towards restoring district additional assistance cuts that have been sustained since the 2008 school year. And we want you to go and take on those building challenges and those deferred maintenance challenges. Then, directly after the legislative session, we heard, well, the $100 million is still in play, but now you can use it for salaries. Well, now the narrative has drastically changed. Now, if we don't consider using it for salaries, it's almost now we're violating the legislative intent of the new money. So, and Tucson Unified's piece of the $100 million is right around $4 million. So now we can't even safely say that that's $4 million available for facilities and deferred maintenance, because now it's not. And ultimately, our board is going to have to decide if it wants to go that direction or not.
We have to take a quick break to listen to some messages from some of the fine Buckmaster Show sponsors. One of those is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, and they're the sponsor of this portion of the Buckmaster Show. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner Steve and Sherry do a lovely job with European baked goods, breads, pastries, cakes, and luscious brownies. They're open for lunch right now. Go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery.
The Humane Society of Southern Arizona's new location is open at 635 West Roger Road. Come fall in love with our pet-friendly cafe. Check out our giant cat habitats or meet a new dog friend in our doggy play yards. You can also bring your pet in for their vaccinations or spay-neuter surgery at our new state-of-the-art clinic. Come see all that we have to offer you and your pet at 635 West Roger Road. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona, saving your future best friend.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays live during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and always on BuckmasterShow.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sitting in for Bill, who's on vacation. Joining me here in studio today are Joe Ferguson, the political reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, and we are speaking with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, the superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Waiting patiently on the live line for a little bit now is Matthew, who has a comment on the topic. Matthew, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. First of all, Dr. Trujillo, I know this is a very difficult time for you trying to get the message straight with regards to what the legislature did. One issue that was a result of the recent budget was the DSEG money. And I'm not going to go into the minutiae of what happened, but basically, Pima County property owners in TUSD on their secondary property tax are going to have an unexpected new bill because of DSEG costs. It is my understanding from talking to some people that the county and everybody is looking, they're all pointing their fingers at you guys, that if any court challenge needs to be done, it needs to be done from you. And I my understanding also is from a lot of Republican property owners in TUSD as well, that they are not happy with what appropriations did. That they consider this unfair, and I think they would be very supportive of TUSD challenging it both on multiple grounds, but also Prop 108. Anyway, I'll leave you guys to discuss the rest of the other issues, but I hope that is at the top of your issue because it's a trust factor. We need to see you fight this. Otherwise, you're going to have difficulty on overrides in the future. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah, this is something that was included in the education budget that was passed. And if it's challenged in court, there's at least according to our columnist at TucsonSentinel.com, Blake Morlock, there's a very good chance it would be found to be unconstitutional because it wasn't passed by the necessary two-thirds supermajority in both houses of the legislature. And it's a tax increase, and you can't do that. So are you looking at that, or are you going to leave that up to an individual taxpayer to take that to court? Or,
absolutely not. I think Matthew has a great point. I agree with everything Matthew said. It is a top priority for the Tucson Unified School District. We're fighting for home. There's 3,000. There's 3,200 employees in our attendance boundaries right now, employees, I'm not even talking about the parents, people that work for us, that will get hit by this tax increase. The vast majority of them are teachers and education support professionals, the very people that the increase in funding is supposed to be helping. All of a sudden now is resulting in an extra tax bill. So we have the same concerns. I do believe that our first step is meeting with County Administrator Mr. Huckleberry. We're trying to get on his calendar to kind of get the lay of the land in this thing, see what our options are. My understanding of the situation in terms of when talking to our own in-house legal counsel, we're not responsible for levying the actual tax. So our first step is to actually meet with Pima County, who does set the tax rates and implements the levy, to figure out what are the next steps, what are the options. And obviously, we're in the process of getting several different legal opinions on this issue. But it is a priority for us.
Anyone else out there who has a question for the superintendent of TUSD, please call us on the live line at 790-2040. Here with the question, Joe Ferguson.
So let's talk a little about time frame. There's a lot of anticipation about whether or not TUSD will take legal action. You're saying you're just trying to get Chuck's attention. I mean, are we talking about legal action in the next month, in the next 6 months? I mean, how long is this going to take before we know if somebody's going to step into this fight?
Well, I think we have two things going on. I do know that several homeowners have approached me in terms of what their options are to file some sort of a class action claim against the state for this illegal, this perceived illegal increase in property taxes. So there's a couple different things at play. There's kind of our own internal homeowners that are now starting to organize and figure out what their options are in terms of taxpayers. And then you have us as a district figuring out what our legal options are and seeing, and then you have what is the county going to do. The county has already sued in a similar situation in 2011 when the same sort of action was taken against Pima County as a whole. And they emerged victorious. Pima County emerged
after
victorious.
After almost five years in court.
So now you have a different situation where now it's a result of one particular school district's boundaries and our desegregation order that results in a levying of an extra tax. So we have to really figure out what our legal options are and then kind of see at what the county is going to do. Now, as a matter of priority, we're trying to get on Mr. Huckleberry's calendar in the next week or two, and then to move very quickly at that point once we get legal guidance and figure out what direction our governing board wants to move in.
Ingrid's on the Buckmaster Show live line with a quick question. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Hi, it's a double question. Would you please tell us who determines what is required to be taught and who determines that it actually has been taught? Is the state involved in monitoring any of this? I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a great question.
It is, and for all of you in the community, I want to thank our caller for that wonderful question. It's always a great opportunity for me to spread information. We're governed by the College and Career Readiness Standards by the Arizona Department of Education, so we are required to teach those standards. Additionally, the Arizona Department of Education sets curricular standards as well as credit accumulation expectations and standards. State statute requires kids to have a certain amount of hours of instruction. It requires kids to have core classes in math and language arts and social studies, particularly at the senior level. Kids are required to have American government, economics, and senior English. So very, very heavily governed curricularly by the state. How do we make sure that it happens? Well, primarily you have your AZ merit exams that happen on a state level. We have internal benchmark exams that occur every 9 weeks. Some schools can choose to do them 3 times a year. Some schools do them 4 times a year. Then we have our evaluation system, which is tied to how well are the teachers implementing the prescribed curriculum for the district.
So the state sets the standards, and then the district, the governing board, and staff work together to develop the specific curriculum at each grade to make sure you're meeting those?
One of the primary functions of the governing board is to approve new curriculum, curricular materials, textbooks, and new courses. To get to our caller's point, we have a little bit of a different process for electives that also requires a vetting from a teacher committee, ultimate approval from district office leadership, and then we put it forward to the governing board for their review and approval.
Just a little bit of a question of Can you talk to me a little bit about your disappointment or your concerns about Tucson legislators voting for this tax?
For me, it's a little confusing.
You said you were going to be on the hot seat.
Yeah. For me, what's a point of confusion is that Pima County legislators wouldn't be all in with Pima County homeowners off of principle. And the two legislators that did vote for this, and I know one of the legislators that actually authored the actual language for the movement of the levy from the primary tax to the secondary tax, has historically been against tax increases. So now we have sort of a contrary message. So that's my only point of confusion. I would be surprised, because I would think that Pima County legislators would be all in with Pima County homeowners. That certainly wasn't the case. So in that sense, it is a little disappointing. We expect a certain level of advocacy, a little bit of unity in these big picture areas such as tax increases. I continue to be concerned about its effects on the morale of our district and the morale and the confidence that the homeowners and the community members in our district have in the district itself and then also in the county.
Can you clarify what your two lawmakers are talking about?
I'd prefer not to.
That would be Senators Bradley and Farley, would it not?
No, I would direct my concern not at Bradley and Farley, but at Representative Leach and Representative. I'm speaking specifically for the DSEG levy,
right?
In terms of understanding that particular idea and language was crafted by Representative Leach.
Thanks.
We're just about out of time. You got anything else that you need to let people know that's going on in TUSD?
Just that anybody that's interested in seeing ultimately what types of expenditure proposals are going to be discussed and considered by our governing board with regard to these additional monies, I would encourage them to tune in May 15th to our governing board meeting or show up.
And you have a pretty tight deadline to figure out what you're going to do with the new budget parameters you have, right?
It's a very, very tight deadline, absolutely, because ultimately the board has to approve our budget for fiscal year 19 by June 30th. At this point, we've facilitated what will be the fifth governing board's budget study session on Tuesday night, and we are hoping to do one more before they finally vote and approve on a budget at the end of June.
Real quick before we head to the break, the owner of KVUI here, Doug Martin, has a quick question.
Hi, Superintendent Trujillo. Appreciate you being on the station. I understand the concern about the tax and everything, and I don't know all the details on it, but my question is more about the DSEG thing to begin with. From what I understand, this has been something we've been... Pardon me?
40 years.
Yeah, 40 years. So, and one of the previous superintendents had told me that he felt like it should have been settled and dealt with at some point in time, but that it has kind of been strung on. So that's my question about it is, what do you think about the DSEG? Do you think we can resolve it, get that behind us?
I really appreciate the question, Doug, there's no priority that is higher for us than to achieve release of court supervision. This case has been going on for 40 years. And I think the best news that we can give the community that demonstrates that urgency is the court-appointed special master in the case is recommending partial release of court supervision over the district. This means that half the order will disappear. And that's a major step forward, and it's a major demonstration to this community that we're not about dragging our feet on this court order. We're not about delaying release from court supervision or our goal of getting off of the unitary status plan. The federal monies or the monies that are dedicated to the implementation of this plan, I often tell people, they aren't monies that have strings. They're monies that have more like ropes or chains. There is very, very finite areas that you are required to spend the money in. And a lot of those areas are in the areas of administration, and they're in the areas that are outside of instruction. And that's not something that we can control. It does contribute to a negative narrative about how this district spends its money. And those are the points of clarification I really want our listeners to understand, that we are about aggressively complying with the Unitary Status Plan and demonstrating good faith implementation and collaborative relationships with all the parties involved for the purposes of achieving the release of court supervision and ultimately the necessity of levying so much money from the taxpayers for the funding of this order.
We could really dig into the whole DSEG plan and how all that works, but I'm afraid we are out of time. Dr. Trujillo, thank you so much for coming in and letting the listeners of the Buckmaster Show know a little bit about what's going on TOST. We'll be right back with the Reporters Roundtable.
Thank you.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on AM 1030 KVY The Voice. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. I'm sitting in for Bill, who's on vacation. We just heard from the superintendent of TUSD, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, and joining me in questioning the superintendent was Joe Ferguson, the political reporter for the Arizona Daily Star. And calling in to run down some more hot topics of the week is Jim Ninsel, the editor of the Tucson Weekly. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dylan. Thanks for having me on with you guys.
Absolutely. I guess the the big breaking news story this morning would be that the federal government is going to retry Lonnie Swartz, the Border Patrol agent who was just found not guilty of second-degree murder, but ended up with a hung jury on manslaughter charges. And the new trial is now set for October. Are you guys surprised that they are going to press charges again? Jim?
Oh, I would say yes. I am surprised, only because I expect that prosecuting a Border Patrol agent isn't a top priority of the Trump Justice Department. So, yeah, a little bit of a surprise that they would run through this again. And certainly the facts in the case are fairly egregious in terms of the number of bullets fired and the danger that the Border Patrol was, Border Patrol agent was in and how he responded. But, yeah, I guess I am a little surprised.
This case really wound through the courts for a number of years before it came to trial, so it wasn't a something that was brought by Attorney General Sessions. I'm a little I guess surprised as well that it's actually being taken up again. We'll see how things go and if this trial even takes place as scheduled in October, or if as the previous one ended up drawn out by years and years of motions by both sides.
Indeed, and yeah, you got to give credit to the U.S. Attorney's Office for having at least apparently some independence here. So let's see where things go from here.
What else is on your radar, Jim?
You know, I think certainly the Fourth Avenue situation is real interesting to watch develop. Seeing the city council trying to figure out how to best move forward with the notion of some pretty major infill development projects there, and the concern about the future of Fourth Avenue and the sort of the very unique atmosphere of Fourth Avenue, and the concern that you're going to basically kill the goose that birthed the golden egg. And there's not much the council can do in most of these cases. Unless these developers want to enter into some incentive agreements and agree to certain agreements, you know, put local development into these local shops, into these developments and whatnot, but not much otherwise leverage in terms of what the council can do.
We were talking a little bit about how the Arizona Constitution limits tax increases. It also certainly limits what local governments can do to limit how people develop their property. And that's the issue there on Fourth Avenue, as well as with the Benedictine Monastery over on Country Club.
But I'll tell you that the city council is looking at a incentive for locals. So it hasn't been fleshed out, and they do have some shaky legal ground to kind of look at, but it looks like there's push to put it into a new economic development incentive in the coming months.
Don't they run into problems treating local businesses differently than out-of-state corporations?
They're still going to go down this path. Whether they're going to be able to find a way to kind of walk that line is yet to be seen.
Because, you know, personally, I'm in favor of local small business. I think it's one of the lifebloods of this community. But Arizona has such weird entangled laws on this stuff that things end up problematic.
And the devil in the details is whether or not the Goldwater Institution would get involved.
Isn't it always?
And whether you can offer incentive. Maybe there's an incentive way to, you know, rather than a zoning, you can possibly say, hey, you can build this if you set aside so much, or something along those lines. But that's, you know, I think that's probably legal because the business would enter into it voluntarily and have the option to say no. But then we'll see, I guess.
But I mean, that's how we got into this problem with Fourth Avenue anyways, was the incentives for infill.
Right. Encouraging. And the underlying zoning there does allow for some pretty tall buildings all up and down Fourth Avenue if property owners decide that's the route they want to go.
Isn't that kind of what we said we wanted as a community when we said, hey, let's build this streetcar and encourage major infill development?
I think we did want more, and certainly there's an affordable living problem downtown. I think, though, there are places where it fits better than other places. I think most of the stuff that's going up in downtown proper makes sense, but I don't know that it makes sense to have really... I mean, Fourth Avenue is, you know, through its organic development over decades, really a unique sort of zone. And I think a lot of people have a fondness for it and want to keep that kind of character. You know, people reflect back to Mill Avenue in Tempe.
Which is just gross, isn't it?
Right, right. And it was this really great little beautiful area of sort of these little brown local shops. And I know it is what it is now. So you hate to see that happen. And on the other hand, you know, there are limited options for the city council to prevent it from happening.
Something else that popped up this week was more campaign fundraising difficulties for Martha McSally, who seems to be raising money for her congressional reelection campaign, and she's not seeking to run for that office again, as well as her Senate campaign at the same time. Run down real quick how this is playing out.
Well, the group that Ron Barber is part of has filed a FEC complaint against McSally, saying that she turned over the money from her House campaign while still taking money and putting it into the Senate campaign. And that's about $1 million that we're talking about. And their concern is that she's taking money from both sides.
Would that be a problem, except for the possibility that somebody might be donating to both and go over the limit?
I've talked to her staff, and they assure me that can't possibly happen. But at the same time, it's absolutely something that feasibly could be an issue.
We've seen years worth of sort of campaign finance irregularities and complete missteps from her campaign. She had a few years ago a $3 million error in her campaign reports, and just got hit by the FEC with the results of an audit where they voted, and this is a Republican-controlled federal agency, voted to say that, yeah, you broke these rules.
But at the same time, Jim.
I was going to say, you know, I spoke with a member of Team McSally one time, and they basically said, look, Martha McSally raises money at such a rapid clip and so much faster than nearly any other member of Congress in the country, that it's just very difficult to keep track of all these numbers. And I think that's sort of where they're coming from in terms of, oh, these are petty little mistakes. It's not a big deal. I think a lot of people are going to see it differently, and certainly this latest complaint is evidence of that. But it amuses me to some degree because, you know, when she voted to support a balanced budget amendment in Congress not that long ago, she basically said that it was only asking Congress to do what we ask every family to do, which is manage your pocketbook properly, and yet her own campaign can't seem to do that.
But isn't there, you know, in general, there are firms that do just this kind of work. There are campaign compliance firms out there that congressional campaigns can contract with, right?
And her treasurer is one of the biggest such firms in the country, and one that seems to repeatedly run into these kinds of problems at a rate much greater than others do.
It's just, it's interesting, and we'll see what happens on this. But, you know, at the same time, I don't know if it's really stopped her from raising money.
It seems to be symptomatic, as Jim was saying, of raising a lot of money. What else is on your radar, Joe? What's going on?
Well, I'm working on a story in Oro Valley. There will be a bond that the council up there will consider worth $14 million. And I think the thing that will be interesting to residents is that they aren't going to get a vote in this $14 million bond. It's going to be backed by sales taxes instead. So after last year's defeat of the really big parks bond, where it was overwhelmingly defeated, this time around they're coming in with a new one that will support $6 million in new golf operations, and the voters aren't going to have anything to say about it.
And how much is that sales tax going to be?
There's no sales tax.
It's going to be backed by sales tax money that's already coming in.
Yeah.
Okay. Not an additional tax, but
no taxes. They're just going to take money out of the sales tax. But when you do these kind of bonds, you know, the groups behind it, the people that are buying these bonds, want better assurances than we're going to sell more stuff next year, and so they're going to be assured, but with state shared revenue and possibly HERF revenues. Doesn't mean they're going to get spent, but it means that they're being guaranteed with those.
All right. And I think we lost Jim, unfortunately. Maybe he'll call back in the few minutes we have left here and help us run down a few more things. Something I've been a little bit curious about is how the city budget has been shaking out, and you've been paying a lot more attention to that than I have. Sadly for you, luckily for me, I think.
The city is working on, you know, it's largely flat. And I think the thing that, you know, in the horizon that's going to be interesting is a couple of things. So the city is going to refinance their pension debt, going from a 19-year payment to a 30-year payment. And that's pretty big in terms of long-term issues.
The interest on that is crazy.
Yeah. And so
something like $3 billion.
It's a huge number. And essentially the city's, you know, saying, listen, whether we pay that money now or we pay it later, there are some short term savings we can see. But long term, it's a big issue. So it's a little bit of a kicking the can down the road.
But the amount they have to shovel towards pensions is just way too much to deal with shorter term.
Right? And nobody wants to touch that. It's a third rail in local Tucson politics in terms of those kind of agreements with police and fire especially. So and from that, you know, there's going to be raises for fire and police, and we'll see those, you know, shake out what they exactly look like. But for now, it's everything else is largely flat. So those who are concerned about parks and things of that nature, there aren't going to be a lot of changes in the near future for them.
There's a proposal that's been floated by some developers to buy and redevelop part of Reed Park. Is that going to happen?
I think it's dead on arrival. Yeah. But
controversial.
I've talked to just say that there's a lot of problems with it, and this is just something that's been floated. It doesn't have any real kind of backing other than just the back of the napkin kind of proposal.
And that would be like the stretch along Broadway right across from the mall would be turned into apartments or something like that.
No, it'd probably be more retail. Yeah. So a gas station or McDonald's, I don't know. I mean, something whatever developers would pay for, but the likelihood would be it'd be retail.
And you don't think that's going to go anywhere?
The people I've talked to inside City Hall say that there's a lot of issues with that, you know, right down to going from 36 holes to 27, from paying for PGA level greens versus what we get right now, how that offsets golfers. There's just a whole slew of problems, including the original agreement that gave that land to the city specifically for Reed Park. What happens when you try to cleave off 15 acres?
All right. Thank you, Joe. And thanks to Jim, even though we lost Jim a few seconds ago. This has been the Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show. We will be right back with Weekend Watch with Matt Russell and find out what's going on in town this weekend.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show here on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sitting in for Bill, who is enjoying his vacation. It's time for Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, like exploring historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Quiff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. For a little bit on what's going on a little closer to home this weekend, let's check in with Matt Russell.
Hey, hey, always great to listen to the Smith Show, man. I just, I dig
thank
it
you,
when you're keeping Bill's seat warm. But, you know, there's just something about a Friday that makes my mouth water, and owing, obviously, to the fact that we've got some great happy hours around town. My pick for today, for some Sentinel snacking and sipping, if you will, is the Commoner & Co. on Sunrise and Kolb. Deep discounts on some pretty imaginative cocktails, like the perfect one for today, the One Rouge with green tea infused gin and hibiscus. And I think pairing that with some of their coconut curry mussels is really going to get your weekend in full swing. It starts at about 4 o'clock today, but I think I'm going to take the rest of the day off, Dylan.
That sounds like a really nice hot weather beverage.
Now, the next pick I picked especially for you, sir.
All right.
Given your role as a fellow whiskey enthusiast, it's a whiskey pairing dinner at Hamilton Distillers on Forbes Boulevard, where they're going to be partnering with the Geronimo's Revenge Food Truck on a four-course culinary and cocktail event on Saturday night at 6. You heard me right. Premium single malt whiskeys paired with food truck cuisine. I think that's Tucson, man. Each dish will be served with a companion cocktail anchored by a different Whiskey Del Box selection. The entire evening, Dylan, is just $60 a person, and you can get your tickets at eventbrite.com, and they're going to sell out probably by the end of the day today, so listeners should get on that right away.
Nice. Well, you know, I love Whiskey Del Box. That's some really fine local beverage, and I can personally attest that Geronimo's Revenge cooks up some pretty damn good food.
This sounds like a great night.
What else you got going on? I think there's a little holiday this weekend, correct, in remembering
yes,
that?
Absolutely. You know, you can always count on, you know, our fabulous resorts around town for a memorable Mother's Day moment.
Mother's Day, that's it.
Some of my Mother's Day lunches and dinners that got my attention this year include Augustine Kitchen downtown, where you can get started with oysters and moonshine pearls. I'm almost afraid to ask, moonshine pearls. You can go to Contigo in the foothills, which is treating mom with a Brazilian barbecue and paella party, and Saguaro Corners for all you Eastsiders. They're going to be kicking off the day with biscuits and duck fat sausage gravy. Duck fat gravy, Dylan!
Nice.
Mom will be in good hands on Sunday, I think, with any of these picks.
And real quick, before we have to wrap up, what do you have in your Inside Tucson Business column this week?
Yeah, it's the great macaron versus macaroon debate. 1-0 or 2, and is there really a difference? I settle this once and for all in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt.
Cheers, Dylan.
Thanks again for joining us on The Buckmaster Show. I'm Dylan Smith, sitting in for Bill. The Buckmaster Show is produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for its content. On behalf of the team here at KVY, including producer-engineers Tom Fairbanks, Ray Allen, Ed Alexander, production supervisor Jerry Cross, station owners Doug and Mary Martin, and Buckmaster Executive Show Assistant Rosemary Brandt, I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sitting in for Bill. And we're all wishing you a very safe and wonderful weekend, and have a happy Mother's Day.